It's the NPR News Update podcast for Monday, August 18. Good day. I'm Phil Picardi, back from a little R&R, and bringing you the Minnesota news on your schedule. Today, details about one Minnesota city's attempt to curtail heart disease, the U of M's business startup program, and Howard Sinker on our regional sports heroes. First, firefighters rescued a 19-year-old man who was trapped inside a Mississippi River Bluff cave in St. Paul early yesterday. The man sent a text message to a friend who alerted law enforcement. Tactical teams from St. Paul and Minneapolis spent about 4 hours looking for the man, and they found him around 5 o'clock yesterday morning. St. Paul Fire Marshal Steve Zachard says the teen fell about 20 feet down a shaft that's roughly 300 feet into the cave.
Told his parents he was going to go to the caves, so it wasn't by accident that he fell in there. He went in there and could get out. Fortunately, got that text message off to his friend, or he might still be down there.
Zachard says the man made the mistake of starting a fire, which could have been deadly if he stayed in there longer. 5 teens have died in St. Paul caves in the past 22 years. Zachard says 3 died in 2004 and 2 in 1992, all overcome by carbon monoxide. Fire heavily damaged a Duluth landmark early this morning. Tim Nelson has more.
The historic Oliver Traphagen House is a 3-story Victorian mansion designed by one of the area's earliest significant architects. He designed Duluth Central High School, the old City Hall downtown, and a number of other well-known Duluth landmarks. The house is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The Redstone Building, about a mile east of downtown Duluth, is home now to a marketing firm. Duluth fire officials say they got a call just before 1 a.m. today. The fire was already burning out a first-floor window and had extended into the floor above when firefighters arrived. More than 24 firefighters fought the blaze. The building suffered more than $150,000 in damage from the fire, and the cause is under investigation. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The Duluth City Council takes up a resolution tonight asking the state to allow Duluth to operate a for-profit casino. Dan Crocker explains.
City Councilor Howie Hansen says his resolution is a response to the Fond du Lac Ojibwe Band's decision 5 years ago to stop sharing revenue from its downtown Fond du Lac casino. The city had relied on the roughly $6 million annually to help repair streets. Earlier this year, the council voted to impose a new fee to replace that lost casino revenue. Hansen says the resolution is not a bluff.
It's about business. It's about survival, and it's about not taxing, as I say, little old ladies out of their household, putting it on her back.
Hansen believes a casino could net $12 million a year for Duluth, but first the state constitution would need to be changed. Fond du Lac chairwoman Karen Diver calls the resolution saber-rattling. The two sides remain locked in litigation over the disputed casino revenue. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
State lawmakers from across the nation meet in the Twin Cities this week to discuss issues and share ideas. Our Tim Pugmire reports.
The National Conference of State Legislatures holds its 40th annual summit Tuesday through Friday in Minneapolis. Organizers expect 5,000 people to attend. DFL Senator Sandy Pappas of St. Paul said the summit helps lawmakers learn how other states are addressing issues like public pensions, education, and transportation.
I used to go to these conferences and I thought, oh, Minnesota, we're so cutting edge. I'm not learning much. That's not true anymore. Other states are ahead of us in so many other areas, so there's so much opportunity to learn.
Pappas said the host committee hired a professional fundraiser who brought in more than $1.4 million from corporate donors to cover the convention costs. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Traffic is hitting a snag just north of St. Paul today. The ramp from eastbound 694 onto southbound 35E into the city will be closed for about a month. Transportation officials say the closure is needed because heavy spring and summer rains washed out parts of the ditch below, putting the road in danger of damage with further erosion. MnDOT's Kent Barnard says motorists will need to navigate a detour.
We're hoping that people can find alternate routes on their own, but the basic detour is going to be to continue eastbound on I-694 to Highway 61 and use the ramps to turn around and come back westbound on 694 and then south on 35E.
Crews will be installing piling to stabilize the soil and protect the shoulder. The Minnesota State Fair opens on Thursday, and officials say anyone bringing pigs to the event should be careful they don't bring a virus that can be fatal to piglets. Mark Stile reports.
The State Fair's official veterinarian, Tom Haggerty, says his team will be watchful for any sign of porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, a disease that's killed thousands of pigs in the state. He says if owners see sickness in any hogs on their farm, they should leave their animals at home.
Every fair is a worry because we don't know what might show up.
Haggerty says hog pens at the fair will be regularly disinfected. The PED virus cannot be transmitted to people. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Worthington.
A study of trout streams that flow into the Mississippi River and Lake Pepin in southeastern Minnesota shows they are generally healthy. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency says bacteria was higher than the state standard in some of the streams. The agency says there's also some concern about nitrates, likely caused by farm runoff. Justin Watkins is the study's project manager.
Even though nitrates aren't particularly high in these streams, we still want to work there to kind of do our part to reduce nutrient export from this watershed.
A statewide nutrient reduction strategy is in the works to help address the Gulf of Mexico dead zone, which is caused by farm runoff and treated wastewater that enter the Mississippi River. The MPCA plans an open house on the trout stream study later this month in Lake City and is accepting comments on the report through September the 10th. 6 years ago, the town of New Ulm set out to eliminate heart attacks in the community. The town has not hit that lofty goal yet and maybe never will, but it has made enough progress in improving health among its citizens that it has won a national award. Lorna Benson reports.
When her weight crept past 300 pounds last year, New Ulm resident Denise Lights knew something had to change. Her clothes didn't fit. Airplane seat belts weren't long enough to reach around her waist, and she was always in pain.
I would drop something on the floor and have to crawl to it. I mean, it was horrible to be like that.
Now, 60 pounds lighter, Lights is pain-free, and her cholesterol levels are finally in a normal range after years of being dangerously high. The 56-year-old says she did it by ditching cookies and processed foods and eating more fruits and vegetables. She also exercises.
Exercise has moved up my list like you can't even imagine. I basically feel like I've never exercised before, and now it's like as important to me as brushing my teeth every day. I just have to. It just makes me feel so much better.
Lights' transformation is remarkable, and she credits the Heart of New Ulm project entirely for her success. The 10-year project, launched in 2009, is a collaboration among Alina Health, the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation, and the community of New Ulm. The program makes sure that Lights and others are never alone in their quest to get healthy. Three times a day, she receives text messages from the project that give her healthy meal ideas and exercise tips. She also finds healthy recipes regularly in her local newspaper and on a weekly cable access program called What's Cooking New Ulm. And when she eats out, Light says it's not as hard as it used to be to find healthy meals. 19 New Ulm restaurants have added healthier options to their menus or switched to using healthier ingredients since the Heart of New Ulm project started. And her neighbors help a lot, too.
People care and they notice, and sometimes it's a little scary because it's like they look at you like, are you going to eat that? You know, and it's like, oh, you're right. You know, I shouldn't be having this anyway.
The real difference here is the community involvement.
Roger Lindholm is a family medicine physician at the New Ulm Medical Center. Early data from the center's electronic health records show that since the project began, the rate of heart attacks in New Ulm has declined more than the statewide average, and so have cardiovascular deaths, though it's still too early to tell whether the trend is meaningful. Lindholm is glad for any help he can get. While patients may tune him out, he says it's harder to tune out a movement that's taken over your town.
They're getting it from their neighbors, and they're talking about it when they go for a walk, or they're talking about it at coffee.
The remarkable level of community support for the project has been one of its greatest successes, says Jackie Boucher, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer at the Minneapolis Heart Institute Foundation. Boucher says 94% of the people in New Ulm were aware of the project during its first year, and most of them participated in at least one activity.
Once you get that great engagement, there's always that what's next, and you know, the challenge is trying to be innovative and obviously, you know, stay within the budget that you have.
A bigger challenge will be making sure that the work that's been done in New Ulm lives on. Boucher says the project is looking now at ways to help New Ulm residents sustain their healthier lifestyles once the project wraps up in a few years. Jim Peacock says the Heart of New Ulm Project has gotten a lot of things right. Peacock is an epidemiologist at the Minnesota Department of Health. He says New Ulm has been an ideal place to test the potential of a community-based wellness project because it has one primary medical provider that can use its electronic medical record to measure which interventions are making people healthier.
We've learned a lot of things from New Ulm, but it does leave us with some questions about how do we most appropriately address health equity in very diverse communities, like in the metro.
Peacock says places with less access to health insurance, transportation, or places where people can exercise or get healthy foods may have trouble replicating the Heart of New Ulm's success. The Heart of New Ulm Project has won an award for its work from the American Hospital Association. The community will celebrate the honor Tuesday. Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The University of Minnesota turned 15 in-house inventions into independent businesses this year. That's a record number for the university, which is looking to connect more of its research to practical and even profitable applications. Launching startups is a financial gamble for the U, but it stands to gain if these businesses succeed. Russ Strati is Associate Director of the University's Venture Center. He joined Tom Cran on Friday with more on the launch business from the U.
So a lot of people might be surprised the university has a venture center and is in this game. So what kinds of businesses first, and what field are we talking about here? Mostly biotech, medtech?
We do research across a very wide range of technologies. Everything from apples, which are very popular,
right?
All the way to the
Zestar, isn't it?
Well, the Honeycrisp,
yeah,
and,
right.
And now the latest is the Sweet Tango, but all the way from fruit to engineered tissue on the other extreme.
And all of these commercialized products, as it were, have come out of research, academic research that's being done at the U.
That's correct.
How does this process work? For example, a researcher at the U. Comes up with something, a product or an invention, how does that end up a full-fledged startup?
As an organization, we see all of the inventions that come out of the research, about 350 of those a year, almost one a day, a calendar day.
Really?
We sort through those to decide which are the ones that we think deserve to be protected, either with a copyright or a patent application. And then once we do that, we then try to work to commercialize. The vast majority of what we work to commercialize is to connect to an existing company because they have the resources and wherewithal in order to bring it to market. But we'll entertain probably about 40 to 50 of them as potential startup companies because we think that's the best way to bring it to market. Tends to be they're very disruptive to the marketplace. They solve a big enough problem that'll justify the kind of investment needed in order to support bringing it to market. And the IP is strong enough and protected enough that the investors and the entrepreneurs have a competitive advantage during that period of bringing that product to market and getting it into the industry.
IP, intellectual property.
Intellectual property, yeah. Yes, thank you.
What's the financial equation here? Who fronts those startup costs? Do you get groups of venture capital investors?
We're now seeing a lot more angels, individuals or angel groups that are stepping in.
These are investor groups who basically put the money up.
Yeah, these are high net worth individuals who are interested either because they want to help try and bring a technology to market because they have a passion for it, or they're very actively looking for a return on an investment as well, to put money in to seed these things forward and see them come to market.
How much does the university stand to profit here? Because does the university then have a stake in these startups, or is it only the investors who make the money?
Well, our mission as an organization is first and foremost to work to bring the technology out to better mankind. If along the way we can bring some money back into the university, to the inventors and to the inventors department,
we do that. The inventors, even the professors or the researchers who discover these things?
They do. Any money that's brought back in, any returns that are brought back in, is split a third, a third, a third. A third goes to the inventors, a third goes to the inventors department, and a third goes to the university, which covers our costs.
Give us an example of the most successful product that has come out of this that would be the sort of poster project.
Well, the Venture Center was formed back in 2005. It takes time for these exits to occur, and we haven't seen, I would say, a big booming exit yet. If you go way back in time, though, Medtronic was a startup that came out of the University of Minnesota. We would like to think that somewhere in these 67 startups, that there might be another Medtronic, mm-hmm. and we have some, you know, high potential startups, and we love them all, but it's still too early to say, you know, that we have a big winner yet.
That's Russ Strati, Associate Director of the University of Minnesota's Venture Center. The Venture Center has been in business since 2005 and has created a total of 67 startup companies.
And that's Tom Cran on Friday's All Things Considered program. We finish the podcast with a look at regional sports. Kathy Werzer talked with Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker this morning.
We're going to ask Howard to bring us up to speed on a number of sports stories. Kind of the lightning round for you here, Howard. Good morning to you.
Sounds good. Ask me anything and I will give you an answer, Kathy.
Oh, ask me anything. All right. Let's start with the Lynx. The WNBA regular season's over. Who are the Lynx facing in the first round of the playoffs?
Well, the scene changed a little bit over the weekend. San Antonio moved into the third playoff spot in the WNBA West. And so the Lynx begin against San Antonio on Thursday night, 8 p.m. at Target Center. The issue is the team's health. Does Maya Moore have to carry the team, and how far can she do it? And the injuries or the health of the forwards, Simone Augustus and Rebecca Brunson, they don't look like they're 100% right now, and that's going to be an issue as the playoffs go on.
Okay, that's the Lynx. Vikings, what's new with the Vikes and the ongoing quarterback drama?
Vikings were fun Saturday night. They beat Arizona 30-28. The excitement was at the end when Teddy Bridgewater led a last-minute touchdown drive, but what really happened was in the first half where Matt Cassel played well enough that there's really no more quarterback issue. There really wasn't going into the game, but there's now is a definite pecking order. Cassel is number one, Bridgewater is number two, and I think Christian Ponder, who didn't play, is like number 100.
Okay. Twins obviously lost, by the way. I see that 12-6 to Kansas.
Twins obviously lost. That's not a new headline.
Okay,
but
there you go.
Let's give them credit a little bit anyway. Fun game Saturday night. Phil Hughes pitched an excellent game, and Kurt Suzuki showed not only why he was an all-star, but why the Twins want to keep him around for a couple of years.
Okay, soccer fans, this one's for you. The Minnesota United, our team in the North American Soccer League, is on a roll.
On a roll in first place in the league after winning the first half title. Saturday night they beat Indy 11 5-1, and if you want to go fishing a little bit on our website, there's an absolutely marvelous goal by Christian Ramirez, one of United and one of the league's top players, that is recommended viewing for the day.
And your favorite college, McAllister, has a new coach.
We do have a new coach. Kelly Roysland, the former Gopher star and Gopher assistant coach, was hired over the weekend as McAllister's women's basketball coach. And it's a great hire, and season tickets are available.
All right. See, now, wasn't that fun?
Absolutely. We should do this more often.
Ask Howard anything. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, Kathy.
At Star Tribune digital sports editor Howard Sinker with Morning Edition host Kathy Werzer. And that's the NPR News Update, Minnesota's news on your schedule. I'm Phil Picardi. I'll have the Tuesday news right back here tomorrow.